Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is the L.A. Steel Show, and Melly Steel. And tonight we're going to take a ride through the spirit world, or talk about it anyway. I wanted to, tonight we're going to discuss spirit possession. I found this article this week regarding it, and kind of interesting, really. It says, "Are We Possessed?" is the name of the story. And that's a good question, if we are or not. And if we're possessed, or if many people are possessed, and it's now been, it's been hidden by psychiatry, basically. It's been being treated by psychiatry. And what is it? What really is possession? Multiple personalities, that kind of thing. It's hard. It's kind of hard to explain. But I thought we would talk about it tonight. And it's rather a lengthy article, but I think we might be able to get through most of it. If you want to get a copy of this, you go to awakeninthedream.com/artis/we-are-we-possessed.html. So you can get a copy of this if you go to that website, awakeninthedream.com. There's something I wanted to mention it tonight because it's supposed to happen tomorrow, but it's extremely disturbing to me. Is this bombing of the moon? I don't know if anybody has thought much about that and how absurd that whole thing is. When we are dealing with a financial crisis, wars, everything imaginable. And out of the sheer and utter madness, insanity of our government, they're allotting millions and billions and billions of dollars to this insane concept of NASA, all right? And the space wars and everything else, but the insanity of it is bombing the moon to find water. I mean, good God, you know, that is the most insane damn thing. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're playing with, all right? But, and the surface of the moon is totally covered with helium. Now, helium is not hydrogen, but helium is a gas, okay? And I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. We don't even know what's up there. They don't know what the gases are. They don't know what this bomb is going to do to the atmosphere of the moon, or to the structure of the moon, or to anything. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're targeting it in a major crater. I mean, this doesn't make sense. And the billions and billions of dollars that are going to this insane project, you know, could feed the hungry, could feed the earth, could feed, I mean, the technology for bombing the stupid moon, I mean, God, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So, I mean, if it makes any sense to you, please call me. Let me know why it makes sense to you. Yeah, you know, it just makes absolutely no sense to me. So, I mean, it's just another example of how screwed up the whole damn system is, all right? And, you know, mad scientists, mad politicians, mad bankers, mad everybody is crazed with power, crazed for power, and greed, and just, it's just a complete and utter planetary possession, right, if you will. And maybe tonight's story will lend some kind of sanity to this little insanity. Are we possessed by Paul Levy? Carl Jung, excuse me, that's a great way to start off. I barely coughed all day and suddenly I'm starting the show. Carl Jung, the great doctor of the soul and one of the most inspired psychologists of the 20th century, had incredible insight into what is currently played out, both individually and collectively in our modern day world. He writes, "If for a moment we look at mankind as one individual, we see that it is like man carried away by unconscious powers. Let me repeat that. He writes, "If for a moment we look at mankind as one individual, we see that it is like a man carried away by unconscious powers. We are a species carried away, possessed by and acting out the unconscious." Jung elaborates, possession though old-fashioned, has by no means become obsolete. Only the name has changed. Formerly they spoke of evil spirits. Now we call them neuroses or unconscious complexes. To condescendingly think that we, as modern-day rational people, are too sophisticated to believe in something as primitive as demons, is to have fallen under the spell of the very evil spirits we are imagining are non-existent. What the ancients called demons are a psychic phenomenon which compel us to act out behaviors contrary to our best intentions. To quote Jung, the psychic condition which breed demons are as actively at work as ever. The demons have not really disappeared, but have merely taken on another form. They have become unconscious psychic forces. Possession, according to Jung, is a primordial psychic phenomenon that denotes a peculiar state of mind characterized by the fact that certain psychic contents, the so-called complexes, take over the control of the total personality in place of the ego, at least temporarily, to such a degree that the free will of the ego is suspended. Though the possessed might imagine they have free will, their freedom is an illusion. They are unwittingly being used as an instrument for some other energy or force to incarnate and express itself through them. Having complexes is not necessarily pathological, as everyone has them. What is pathological, however, is thinking we don't have complexes, which is the precondition that makes us most vulnerable to possession. Jung clarifies, everyone knows nowadays that people have complexes. What is not so well known, though, far more important theoretically, is that complexes can have us. The more complexes we have, the more we are possessed. We don't need to get rid of our complexes. Rather, we need to become consciously aware of them. What is important is what we do with our complexes. I don't know if I agree with that. You just got to get rid of them. You got to get rid of these problems that you got, you know. These horrible thoughts that might creep in, or these, you just push them out. Keep them out. Complexes are the psychic agencies which flavor and determine our psychological view of the world. To quote Jung, the royal road to the unconscious, however, is not the dream, but the complex, which is the author of dreams and of symptoms. Thematically organized, such as the power complex, savior complex, mother complex, inferiority complex, etc., the complexes are the vehicles that flesh out the rich repository of contents of the underlying archetypes, giving the formless archetypes a specifically human face. Complexes are living elemental units of the psyche, acting like a focal or nodal point of psychic life in which the energy charge of the various archetypes of the collective unconscious are concentrated. An emotionally charged complex acts like the epicenter of a magnetic field, attracting and potentially assimilating into itself everything that has any resonance, relevance, or is related to itself in any way. This inner process can be seen as it enacts itself in the outer world when we come in contact with someone who has an activated complex, and we find ourselves drafted into their process, picking up a role in their psyche. This is an outer reflection of how a complex can attract, co-opt, and subsume other parts of the environment, both inner and outer, into itself. Complexes, when split off from consciousness, can potentially engulf and possess the whole personality. I believe that. I tend to believe part of that. Addictions. Yes, and that was a work assignment that I had to answer. I don't know if I agree with this fully, but we do get engulfed by things. I do. Everyone does. We become obsessed with certain things. Like right now, I'm trying to finish up this book. I'm getting it published in December, or not published, it should be out by December, but I'm doing final repairs to it, and I'm more or less obsessed by it, consumed by it, and it's taking all my time, and it's a 450-page book, but it's all-consuming in itself. And yes, we become obsessed with these things, especially when we're trying to perfect them. And excuse me, put them in a way, in a format, but and make them clear to everybody. Especially the size book that I'm putting together—it's ridiculous, actually, but. But you become obsessed with certain things, and whatever pushes you to doing things is an obsession. It can be an obsession. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. My problem, and I'm just speaking off the cuff here, but I have a difficulty with my obsessions in that when I have something, when I have to do something creatively, when I have to complete a program or a video work or writing or whatever it is, I'm 100% consumed by whatever that is, that project is that I have to do. Unfortunately, it overwhelms the rest of my life a lot of times. I'm constantly compelled until it's completed. It's just an obsessive quality that I have about certain things, especially work-related. Creative and work-related things, I have a tendency to become overwhelmed by them. And not overwhelmed is not a good word, but I can become consumed by them until they're complete. Possession is an interesting word. It conjures up immediate associations of the devil, who, mythologically speaking, is the one who possesses us. In the demonic sense of the word, Jung, however, differentiates his meaning of the word possession from the meaning associated with the Catholic Church. For example, when he writes, "The Church's idea of possession, therefore, is limited to extremely rare cases, whereas I would use it in a much wider sense as designating a frequently occurring psychic phenomenon. Possession, psychologically speaking, is to identify with a complex of the unconscious and become taken over by it such that we act it out in as, man, the way this guy writes really sucks, and become taken over by it such that we act it out in as and through our lives. Who among us hasn't done this? Who among us shall cast the first stone? Yeah, okay, yeah. You suck, dude. Anyway, I don't know. I kind of briefly went over this thing to suggest I'm thinking to read it. But this guy seems like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I don't think he understands Jung's work either. But, Jung writes, since the world began, mankind has been possessed. Okay? Possession is synonymous with bondage. Jung comments that in state of possession, it comes down to the same age-old experience, something objectively psychic and strange to us, not under our control, is fixedly opposed to the sovereignty of our will. Possession means being supplanted by something stronger, being taken over and owned by something other than ourselves. Jung says, whenever we are still attached, we are still possessed. And when we are possessed, there is one stronger than us who possesses us. We've all had moments where we've been possessed by something, where we felt not ourselves, where we are no longer identical with ourselves. And some of us spend our whole lives living someone else's life instead of our own. We've all had moments where something has gotten into us, where we feel out of sorts, besides ourselves. When deeper primordial archetypes sees us, Jung writes, they easily catch hold of you, and you are possessed as if they were lions or bears, says primitive forces, which are quite different stronger than you. I don't agree with that. I never fully agreed with Jung. And Jung said something interesting that, you know, Jung flipped out, basically. He was studying these possessions when he was in, he went to Africa and he was studying with shamans and medicine men and stuff and watching and seeing them come in and out of trances and so on and so forth. And he saw something when he was there doing that scared the living hell out of him, all right? And he saw spirits. He probably saw shape-shifting. He probably saw a number of things that that are possible to do by interesting people, by people that are aware of how to do it. But it's nothing to be afraid of. It's simply trying to create... You know, it's simply somebody with a, you know, like a magician, you know, who knows how to do something to create an illusion. And that's basically what we're dealing with. We're dealing with illusion. We're dealing with our own illusions. You know, I want to be an American Idol, you know what I mean? I can't sing and I can't dance, but I can flirt, you know? I mean, I don't know. But you see these poor people that are going go up there and make fools out of themselves, and because they have the illusion or delusion that they are, you know, stars or star quality. We all have that. Even myself, like, you know, I have that. We all have that. And it's part of us, but it's part of our ego more than anything else. And if we can control the ego to the extent that we can... that we understand, all inspiration generally is not ours. I don't give any credit to myself for anything that I create. I become so involved with my work, not because I'm trying to isolate myself from anything or put off anything or whatever. I become so involved with the project because a creative endeavor whether a video show or a radio show or writing an article or writing this book or, you know, creating music, that I know that I'll reread things or I'll listen to things or I'll listen to stuff and I know that that isn't me. It's not me talking. Or, well, I can't say it's me talking, but it's not me in the sense that what I'm saying sometimes I feel is almost channeled. I don't mean that in the very bad sense either. I take full credit for everything lousy that I say or everything wrong that I say because it's me, you know. It's my human my humanity that causes me to stumble and fall, and it's not some ghostly possession or some evil intended demon. I have no problem with spirits. Spirits can be very kind with me, and evil ones go away. You just say go away, and they go away. You know, you don't have to deal with these things. I mean, people who deal. I mean, I've read about it. I've read enough and seen enough and known enough people who dabble in these areas. But black arts are foolish because you really don't know what you're dealing with. But in a sense of tarot, for instance, I read the tarot. I trust the tarot. Not always. I don't always trust the tarot card because sometimes they give you a false reading. But you have to trust your intuition. Spirits will trick you up. They'll give you a false sense of hope. They'll give you a false sense of they'll pump you up, you know. So it's important when you're dealing with the other dimensions, with the spiritual realm, that you remain extremely humble and connected to your heart and your soul constantly, connected to your intuition. Intuition is the essence of everything that you do. If you know that it's right, and you know that it's pure, and you know that it's the right thing to do, your intuition tells you that. That's how you know. It's a God-given gift to mankind. It's the center of your soul that speaks to you. And what happens is most people will, rather than listen to their heart, listen to their intuition, will listen to somebody else, or some Momo on television, or me. You know, I don't mean to say that. You know, I'm glad you're listening to me, and I'm hoping that I can I put out some honesty here and try to show some integrity in what I say. I'm not saying that I'm always right. But I can say that I will deny any and all evil that enters my life. Because I have no need for it. I have no need for despondency and despair. I have no need for greed. I have no need for hatred. I spout out. I do hate things. There's no question about it. But that hatred is a lower vibration that I prefer not to have if I can't. But I get ticked off at things, and certain things I hate. It's hard not to hate evil. Pure evil is very hard not to hate. But it counts on you hating it. That's what it hopes for. That's what it wants. It wants you to hate it, because as you hate it, you put energy into it. And as you put energy into it, you allow it to feed, and you allow it to grow, and you allow it to fester, and you allow it to poison your system. So, fear does that. Ignorance does that. Stupidity does that. It allows the wicked element of your of existence to take over, you know, and consume you with hatred or bigotry or ignorance or whatever it is. And I'm as bad as others. But I don't blame the wicked for that. I blame myself for that. You know, I don't blame the evil ones, okay, for my being out of joint today. You know what I mean? Or out of whack. You know. I mean, if I say, "Goddamn Bush" or "Goddamn Obama," well, I mean it. Goddamn, okay, for their horrible, miserable, concepts of the world. These men are possessed. But I believe those men are possessed. I believe all men in great power are possessed because they're possessed by their power. And I also believe many of them are truly the greatest leaders that we've had are probably the most incompetent, okay? They're just led by power, and you know, and they probably have some good advisors, but I mean, Bush was a complete idiot, and Obama, he's proven to be incompetent, and Clinton was a lech, and George Bush was a man of true evil, very evil intent, and he was possessed by that, and he worships Moloch. He worships the devil. His family is devil worshippers, Satanists. We know that. It's been proven. It's been known for many, many years. Skull and Bones, George Bush, Prescott Bush, and George Bush Jr. were all presidents of the Skull and Bones, which are all satanic worshippers. And, they carry on. And I mean, it's quite a story, but Satanism is not what we think it is. Satanism is against man, against God, not necessarily a demonic figure. It's just what we are, what we can become. If we become too cynical, if we become too full of hate or rage or obsessed by power or possessed by greed or sex or lust, you know, things like that, those are the attributes of possession. Okay, those are the things that possess us. And those are the things that we have to stay away from. As much as I oftentimes criticize Christianity, I do quite often, because I don't like what Catholicism has done, nor do I like what Protestantism has done. But if we take the concept of the Christ and the concept of Christhood, and we look at what that man has said, if he said it, then we have to understand that that we are not
I'm home.
Yes, I hear you. I'm on the air, Lila. Then what we have to understand is that possession is just is allowing ourselves to be taken over and consumed by these, like greed, power, lust, you know, these kind of things. And it's very easy to do. You know? It distorts your mind. It takes over. It becomes an addiction. Right? The Young comments, "In all cases, identification with the unconscious brings a weakening of consciousness, and herein lies the danger. You do not make an identification. You do not identify yourself, but you experience your identity with the archetype in an unconscious way, and so are possessed by it, which I said you identify with whatever that is, you know, whatever that all-consuming thing is. And you're possessed by it. And anything we are unconsciously identical with, we are possessed by. And hence, compelled to act out in our life without understanding why. Though we have dismissed the idea of demons in the altar of our rationality, to quote Jung, man himself has taken over their role without knowing it, and does the devilish work for destruction with far more effective tools than the spirit did. In the olden days, men were brutal. Now they are dehumanized and possessed to a degree that even the blackest Middle Ages did not know. More than ever, current-day humanity is certainly acting as if it is a species possessed. Eminent theologian and 911 truth activist David Ray Griffin writes, "It does seem that we are possessed by some demonic power that is leading us trance-like into self-destruction." Jung comments, "An unknown something has taken possession of a smaller and greater portion of the psychic and asserts its hateful and harmful existence undeterred by all our insight, reason, and energy, thereby proclaiming the power of the unconscious over the conscious mind. The sovereign power of possession, when we are possessed, we are not free. We are not masters in our own house. When we are possessed by the unconscious, we become disassociated from ourselves such that, as Jung writes, there is a tearing loose of part of one's nature. It is the disappearance and emancipation of a complex, which thereupon becomes a tyrannical usurper of consciousness, oppressing the whole man. It throws him off and drives him to actions whose blind one-sidedness inevitably leads to self-destruction." And that's what I was saying. Man's greed, man's hatred, man's love, man's drive them. And once they identify, their unconscious mind identifies with that need or with that power, then that power takes over and possesses the individual. And, you know, it happens, and, you know, and it happens for the good, and it happens for the bad as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be evil, but all obsessions are brought about by an identification with the unconscious. Autonomous complexes are part of the psyche which have split off due to shock, trauma, or breach of our boundaries, and have developed a seemingly autonomous life and apparently independent will of their own. Though we are unconsciously identified with them, autonomous complexes are subjectively experienced as others than ourselves. Apart from their inherent obscurity and strangeness, our unconscious identification with autonomous complexes is the essential reason why it is so hard to get a handle on them. Autonomous complexes act upon us. They feel like our most intimate self, eventually need to be owned, but paradoxically don't belong to us. The seeming autonomy of the archetypes and complexes is what gives rise to the ideas of the supernatural beings. Endowed with the numinous energy, autonomous complexes are what our ancestors used to call demons. Autonomous complexes are a psychological name for the demons in the archetypical process of addiction that animate us to compulsively act out our addictive behavior. A demon or autonomous complex, to quote Jung, behaves like an animated foreign body in the sphere of consciousness. The complex can usually be suppressed with an effort of will, but not argued out of existence, and at the first suitable opportunity, it reappears in all its original strength. Due to their lack of association with the conscious ego, Autonomous complexes are typically not open to being influenced, educated, or corrected by reality. An intruder from this unconscious and a disturber of the peace, an autonomous complex, Jung points out, behaves exactly like a goblin that is always eluding our grasp. If left unreflected upon, these demons or autonomous complexes wreak havoc for everyone within their sphere of influence. And Jung writes, any autonomous complex not subject to this tug to the conscious will exert a positive effect of consciousness proportional to its restraint and limits the latter of freedom. As it takes over, it becomes in charge of a person, a complex incorporates a seemingly autonomous regime within the greater body politic of the psyche. Writing about autonomous complexes, Jung says, the complex forms sometimes like a shadow government of the ego, in that the complex dictates to the ego. When we are taken over by an internal conflict with and because of an autonomous complex, it is as if we, as natural rulers of our own psychic landscape, have been deposed and are living in an occupied country. We are allowed our seeming freedom as long as it doesn't threaten the sovereignty and dominance of the ruling power. Jung comments, a man does not notice it when he is governed by a demon. He puts all his skill and cunning at the service of his unconscious master, thereby heightening its power a thousandfold. A man does not notice it when he is governed by a demon. I'm reading this over again. But he puts all his skill and cunning at the service of the unconscious master, thereby heightening its power a thousandfold. Being non-local, this inner psychological situation can manifest both within our psyche and out in the world at the same time. That's why people can do mass murders. That's why people can kill one another. That complex, if you will, or that possession comes over them, and it's as though it takes over their body, takes over their mind, and they do the deed, you know, and screw up their lives and kill and someone else's life, or that obsession to steal, or the obsession to harm, destroy, vandalize, whatever it is, fight. You know, it's a compulsion that is possessing you. All right? And demons are autonomous complexes, possessive and obsessive effect on consciousness. Interestingly, the word obsession originally meant to be under the influence of an evil possession. Obsession refers to certain ideas that have taken possession of the person. We can become possessed by unshakable ideas of the way things should be or who we think we are, oppressing and tyrannizing both ourselves and others who hold a different viewpoint in the process. Jung writes, the idea is like an autonomous being that wants a body to so much that it even incarnates in the body. One begins to play, to perform the idea, and then people say one is completely mad. And the idea has taken possession of one till it is as if one were out of one's mind. Millions of our species have killed and been killed over a fixed idea. Commandeering and colonizing our psyche, a split-off autonomous complex is potentially like a vampiric virus, in that it is fundamentally dead matter. It is only in a living being that it acquires a quasi-life. Just like a vampire revitalizes itself by sucking out life force, when we unconsciously identify with an unactivated autonomous complex, we are literally animating and enlivening the undead. Complicit in our own victimization, we then unwittingly give away our freedom, power, and life force in the process. Like cancer cells ravaging the body, disassociated autonomous complexes are the splinter psyche that can become overly swollen in psychic energy, and then will propagate and metastasize themselves with the psyche, consuming, devouring, and cannibalizing the healthy aspects of the psyche. drawing and attracting all of the wholesome parts of the psyche into itself. An autonomous complex can potentially warp and destroy the psyche of the person or nation so afflicted. Non-locally infecting and spreading by psychic contagion its malaise to the surrounding field in the process. And boy, we see that all the time, and you know, this madness of war, aggression, bloodlust, and, you know, these are all possessions of a people and a nation, and a world gone mad, gone absolutely mad. And you know, I admit, I become obsessed with certain things that I do. But the reason I do is because I feel there's a need to do it. There's a definite need to do it. And it's not a bad need. I mean, like, for instance, why I wanted to read this article tonight is because, and why I even did the show tonight, is because I felt the need and to talk about this. Because I thought maybe somewhere there are people out there that are listening to this show and or will listen to this show who might be enlightened by this article. I feel compelled to enlighten people in the process of my own learning, to share that knowledge. There's no sense in hoarding it. I mean, what good does it do to hoard this kind of knowledge? I learn by implementing the knowledge, and I learn by sharing the knowledge with other people. And that enlightens me, and of course, and I hope enlightens other people. Autonomous complexes, a part of the psyche that has split off due to shock, trauma, or breach of our boundaries, and have developed a seemingly autonomous life and apparently independent will of their own. Though we are unconsciously identified with them, autonomous complexes are subjectively experienced as others, as other than ourselves. Have you read this? Go on to the next page here. Finding the name. When we see a demon, we know its name, which helps us to get a handle on it. I never saw a demon, and I don't know its name if I did. Naming is exorcistic, as it dispels the demon's power over us. How the hell do you know the demon's name? Unless it tells you. Jung says that the act of naming is, like baptism, extremely important as regards the creation of personality, for a magical power has been attributed to the name since time immemorial. To know the name, to know the secret name of a person or a demon, is to have power over him. Elsewhere, Jung writes, for mankind it was always like a deliverance from a nightmare when the new name was found. Finding the name is an act of power, Jung comments. The moment you can designate the live archetype by its symbol, you feel relieved. That is a good and positive movement, a moment, even if it is a horrible. Therefore, old Egyptian medicine consisted in giving the thing the right name. A new name always produces an extraordinary effect. We cannot rationalize these things. They cast a spell. They are symbols. They really do influence the unconscious as the unconscious influences us. It is very important for us to reintroduce the word demon and possession back into our vocabulary, minus the fear that we will be seen as being primitive, crazy, or even possessed ourselves if we use such words. We need to expand our psycho-spiritual fluency to enable us to navigate the living waters of our inner and outer landscapes. Being possessed by demons, taken over by unconscious psychic forces, is something that happens to all of us, and it is to our great advantage to be able to properly name our experience. Finding the name empowers us to creatively engage with these parts of ourselves that are emerging from the shadows in the name of healing. Right. How do we make a word? We spell it. In finding the words of our experience, we are casting a positive spell. Oh, that's interesting. Whose non-local orbit and influence is liberating. We are then able to consciously language and give voice to our experience, which is to step into and access the creative spirit. In learning new creative ways to express ourselves, we are dispelling the curse we are under or of not being able to symbolize our experience. In learning to consciously spellcast the world is no longer written in stone. With us as its passive victims, we realize and tap into the creative and transformative power of the word, the logos, as it says in the Bible, and first was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God, and creating a new language so as to recreate ourselves anew, we step into the archetypical figure of the wounded healer. In animating these archetypical figures, we actively and creatively participate in our own evolutionary process, expanding and refining the way we tell emphatically commune and telepathically communicate with each other as well as with ourselves. So as we create the words, create the demon or dispel the demon. Kind of interesting. So I guess we make a name for it if we want to. In addition, part of the reestablishing the word demon and possession is meaning filled is to complement these words with the idea that if we have a reaction and become triggered by these words, the figure within us who is being triggered might be the very demon who is possessing us. I've coined the name non-local demon to capture this elusive, mercurial, and non-local demon that haunts our world. Like minting a coin, when we coin a phrase and find the name, we create currency in the realm of mind, with which to engage in commerce with each other as well as with ourselves. This is to generate consciousness, which is something of a genuine value. Once we see how the non-local demon clandestinely operates throughout the underlying field of consciousness by hiding and obfuscating itself through our unconscious, hooking and insinuating itself into our blind spots, we have simultaneously taken away its power and empowered ourselves, creating a wealth of new ways for us to creatively respond that were previously unavailable. Being non-local, one of the ways the non-local demon incarnates itself is through our internal unconscious reactions to encountering the myriad and even shape-shifting forms and guises of the non-local demon in the outer world. The way to most effectively deal with a demon is to courageously turn our attention upon what it triggers inside of us. The Gnostic test, the Gospel of Philip says, so long as the root of wickedness is hidden, it is strong. But when it is recognized, it is dissolved. When it is revealed, it perishes. As for ourselves, let us dig down after the root of evil, which is within each of us. Excuse me. It produces its fruit in our hearts. It masters us. We are its slaves. It takes us captive to make us do what we do not want, and want what we do want. but let me repeat that. The Gospel of Philip says, it's from the Gnostic text, as long as the root of wickedness is hidden, it is strong. But when it is recognized, it is dissolved. When it is revealed, it perishes. As for ourselves, let us each dig down after the root of evil, which is within us, each of us, and produces its fruit in our heart. It masters us. We are its slaves. It takes us captive to make us do what we do not want and what we do want. We do not do. It is powerful because we have not recognized it. The source of the demon lies within ourselves. As compared to existing by virtue of something, demons can only live by the lack of virtue of our own obscured and unexamined minds. And the above Gnostic quote brings to mind Paul's famous passage from the New Testament. That which I would do, I do not, and that which I would not do, I do. Romans 7:15, which is a clear and simple expression of our human proclivity for possession, if there ever was one. In an unillumined and unrecognized autonomous complex, diabolically compels us to act out contrary to our best intentions, as any of us who struggled with any form of addiction behavior knows from our own experience. Being possessed by demons is a problem as old as humanity. We are all potential shamans and healers, for as we metabolize the darkness and assimilate our demons, we add light to the non-locally litten up the collective shadow for everyone. If the demons are not integrated, neither is the human soul, which is to say that embracing and integrating our demons is critical to the evolution of the soul. Jung ponders, how can evil be integrated? There is only one possibility, to assimilate it. That is to say, raise it to the level of consciousness. And raising the demons to the level of consciousness takes away their autonomous existence as they rejoin the profound unity of the psyche. And Jung comments, then the opus magnum, the great work of alchemy, is finished. The human soul is completely integrated. And he says, to see his article called The Sacred Art of Alchemy. Got about 7 minutes left, and going to possibly get it. I don't know if I can finish this one section here, but we'll try. The demonic. To quote noted psychologist Rollo May, the demonic is any natural function that has the power to take over the whole person or whole nation. The demonic can be either creative or destructive. Demonic violence is the demonic gone awry. Ages, such as ours, tend to be times when the demonic is expressed in its most destructive form. The demonic is not an objectively existing metaphysical entity in the Christian sense, but is an archetypical function of human experience, a psychic as well as an existential reality in which we all participate. The demonic is a archetypical energy which can take over a person, group, or a nation. Jung writes, we know that an archetype can break with shattering force into an individual human life and into the life of a nation. Archetypes are living, dynamic entities, psychological instincts of informational fields of influence that provide the underlying template which patterns human behavior, perceptions, and experience. The demonic announces itself by drafting people into its service, enlisting human beings as instruments of full-bodied revelation of itself. Jung comments, One does not realize yet when an archetype is unconsciously constellated and not consciously understood, one is possessed by it and forced to its fatal goal. The demonic expresses itself by conscripting us to its cause and compelling us to unconsciously act it out so as to live, to give living form to itself in the third dimension. And, I mean, the use of drafting or constricting, is similar to how they got people to fight in wars. They drafted them, you know. They drafted them, they conscripted them, and they had them kill, and they had trained them to kill, and if they didn't kill, then they were killed themselves, and they had to go against their own natures. So that was a national obsession, you know. And we're in that today. A lot of people are fighting two wars, and you know, we have an imperialistic presidency and all kinds of problems related to that. So we're obsessed, and we have to break out of that obsession and that possession. And the only way we can do that is bring that, is like Jung says, we have to bring it to the fore, front, bring it to the conscious mind, bring it up. You know, just forget about this patriotic crap. What's happening here, you know, love my country, right or wrong. It's insane, you know. You love your wife, but if she tries to kill you, you know, it's like you're crazy. Or you love your husband, or you love your kids, but if they're trying to kill you, you know, they're crazy. You have to bring it to the forefront and see that their problem and eliminate the problem. Yeah. So either run like hell or get help. And that's exactly what's happening. And it's important to bring these hypocrisies, we live in hypocrisy. Whole life is one big hypocritical pie. If we believe anything. If we don't live lives of some integrity, you know, and hold it up as the ultimate, you know, human thing to do, as we seek Christhood, as we seek the perfection of man, and by seeking the perfection of mankind or ourselves, then we are seeking Christhood. And once we achieve that, then we cannot be possessed. We cannot have these obsessions. Nothing worries us. And the only way that we can get to that point is through understanding ourselves and our connection to God, our Creator. Okay? And possession, I would love to be possessed by God. That's what you wish for. That's what you hope for. Your life, to be possessed by the spirit that created you, you know, to go back to the One, and that's what the journey is. So, let us go there. And the show's about over. We got 28 seconds remaining. I want to thank everybody for listening. Please join us tomorrow. I think we'll be having George Dixon with us. If not, we will be tap dancing into the paranormal. So. Please enjoy, tell your friends, and join us tomorrow. Thanks. Good night.